Welcome to GeoTalk, the podcast for geocaches down under. In this episode of GeoTalk, we travel to South Australia to speak to SA Parrothead. We unveil a competition where you can win a spinner geocoin, and we go through some of your emails in the lead up to 2008. All this and more on GeoTalk. Welcome to episode 22 of GeoTalk. Now, as I'm recording this, it's 2007, but by the time you're listening to it, it's probably 2008. So either side of the year that you're listening to, Happy New Year, and hope 2008 is a great geocaching year for you all. Hope you all enjoyed the Christmas holiday period, and if you were after a geocaching gift, I hope Santa brought it along for you. But yeah, looking forward to the next 12 months to see what happens. Now, it's going to be an interesting year because if you've been following some of the forums, either the Australian or worldwide ones, you would have heard or read from Jeremy some talk about Phoenix, which is version 2 of the geocaching.com website. Now, some interesting things to come out of it, and I won't go through it word by word, but one of the interesting things is that in the future, our accounts will no longer be an account with geocaching.com or with waymarking.com or anything else they set up. It'll be with Groundspeak, the company that runs them, and they're looking at, from what I gather, combining them all together. So it'll be a much easier, simpler website, probably one website. And some of the things that you'll be able to do is switch on and switch off certain features that you want, particularly for premium members. So it's going to be an interesting space to watch. I'll give you some links in the show notes to those that page that's on the Groundspeak forums with Jeremy's post, and I'm sure that the forums are going to be buzzing with what's happening over the next few months. Expect them to happen sometime in the second quarter of 2008. Now, down under, it's summertime, and it's great to be geocaching because we've got long, long days and warm weather. And I know that people in Western Australia just recently had temperatures in the low 40s. I think they had the hottest Christmas day on record of about 41 or 42, somewhere around that in degrees. That's about 110 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's pretty warm. And we're going to be, in the next episode or so, looking at some of the things that you should be taking into account when you go geocaching in the summer months. But towards the end of this episode, we're going to revisit something from episode 3, and that is looking at snakes and what to do when you encounter a snake and what to do if you're unfortunately bitten by a snake. Now, I mentioned in the intro to the show that I'm going to have a little bit of a competition over the next few episodes, and it's to try and encourage you all, in fact, bribe you all, to send in some audio. And I'm interested, now that it's a new year and it's 2008, it means that there are New Year's resolutions. And I want to find out, what is your New Year geocaching resolution for 2008? So what you need to do is either record the audio and email it to geotalk@mac.com, or you can call it in either from your mobile phone or your hand phone, or even as a Skype call. Now, you can do the Skype call by Skyping SpinDocBob, which is all one word, or you can call 02-800-50-436. Now, if you do that and we play your audio on the show with your New Year resolution, geocaching one, of course, I'm going to then randomly pull a name out of the hat, and you'll win a spinner geocoin, which is from my friend Hema over in Taiwan. He gave me a couple. And I'm going to give one away in the show, and there will be a picture of it on the website so you can see what it looks like. So if you want to win yourself a free geocoin, and it's quite a large one with a middle that spins around, all you need to do is send in some audio with your geocaching New Year resolution. And quickly, before I go into the GeoTalk trivia question for this episode, a big congratulations to the Cacher Maniacs, who have just celebrated their first anniversary and have put out their episode. So if you haven't listened to it, check out cachermaniacs.com. And from memory, they've already had at least two Australians feature the Bronze and Dax Emu Mob. And you can go back through their archives and listen to that. I think they're up to about episode 58 now. So they've got quite a lot of interviews. Some of them are very interesting and quite funny, so check that out. Well, it's time now for the GeoTalk trivia question, and in this one, the question is, who is the most obsessed geocacher in Australia and the most obsessed one in New Zealand? See how you go at the end of the podcast. Well, on GeoTalk, we once again travel to the geocaching capital of Australia, and we're joined by Andrew, also known as SA Parrothead. How are you going?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Now, let's start first of all with when did you start getting into geocaching and how did you come up with your name?
Well, I started in April in 2004. I'm one of these people who love to go. When I go on holidays, I just walk away from the hotel and walk for about an hour and then wonder how the hell to get back. So when I saw a GPS unit, I thought that would be a great idea. And then a guy at work said to me, hey, you know, you can do this as well. And that was it. I just took off from there. And the name came about because of an American singer called Jimmy Buffett, music I encountered during the 70s when Cyclone Tracy was around. I met some American carpenters who had the music, and followers of Jimmy Buffett, the musician, are called Parrotheads. So I couldn't resist being the only Parrothead in South Australia. So
was the person at work into geocaching at the time, and are they still active?
Yeah, Myray was the name of the guy who was doing it, Team Myray, so Jay Morphy. And he showed me the website, and I went and had a look at RAF Chapel. That was the first cache I ever did on the 23rd of April.
How many caches have you found so far in the 3 and a bit years that you've been caching?
Up to 15,010. I just hit 15,000 over the weekend at the June event down at Mount.
So is that 15,000 or 1,500?
1,510. How many did I say? 15,000.
Yeah. I wish. I thought you were going to be up there with some of the top Americans for a second.
That would put my rating in with the Americans.
Top Americans for a second.
Yeah, I thought it would be in America. Yeah, 1,510. So I did 2 today, so that will put me on 12.
So it seems to be that Adelaide has a lot of geocaches, both people who are looking for them and those that are hidden. Is there anything in the water, do you think, down there?
I just think we're a competitive state all round. You know, like, it just seems to me that if South Australia takes something on, we like to do it well, you know. We had the Grand Prix and we gave it a really good shot, and we've entered the football AFL down here and we've given them a good hiding. South Australians are passionate about things when they take it up, and I reckon we've embraced it with geocaching.
So if there was a state of origin for geocaching, you think SA would pretty much win it?
Well, we're not doing bad. I mean, we've got a pretty good cache density, haven't we? And people seem to love coming down here and running around. I mean, we get a lot of interstate visitors who have a bit of a trot around the old town.
So tell us about some of Zitheran's puzzle caches.
Oh, they've been interesting. They've certainly given me a challenge. I've actually managed to complete up until his metal ones, or the cipher ones that he's doing, the tin, the bronze, the silver, the gold. I gather there's going to be a platinum one later on. That can be quite sneaky, and it's certainly one of those things of geocaching where it takes you out into areas you never would have thought about before, like doing different sorts of ciphers that never occurred to me. And certainly the other ones, like the colours with the black and the white one and the green and blue, and, you know, they certainly challenge you to go into other different directions outside of geocaching and get the old computer tools out and start rearranging things, there can be no doubt.
So I suppose it takes that thing of geocaching, takes you to places that you've never been before, goes that step further and says geocaching in Adelaide gets you to do things that you've never done before.
Certainly, I mean, isn't that the element of the puzzles? You know, like, to me, they're like a separate category. You know, you have your traditionals and your multis where you go out and find wonderful things, and then you can have puzzles that stretch your mind into directions that you really wouldn't have thought of going.
Take us through one of your favourite geocaches or the favourite type of geocache that you have.
Me? I think the ones that I really like are getting out into the bush, you know, like... Certainly a foot in both camps in Narkat Forest or Top Red Centre, or that wasn't too bad. A big bearded Victorian where I had to throw a kayak on the car and paddle down the Murray a bit to find it, or under the shade of the Coolabah tree in the middle of the Simpson Desert. That was absolutely magnificent. And just around the corner, standing on the corner, you know, you've got 1 foot in New South Wales or whatever, and Queensland and Northern Territory and South Australia, you know, both... Those sorts of things are what I really like, getting out into the country and finding things that you just wouldn't normally have got.
Well, take us through the a foot in each corner case that you just mentioned. I mean, what sort of distances and what's involved in getting to a case like that?
Certainly. If you go, like, standing on the corner, I mean, that one we had, it was about two drivers, two navigators. We had two four-wheel drives with that. That was the Simpson Desert crossing. You know, you had to load about 180 kilos of fuel on liters of fuel on board the car, and so that, you know, certainly calculate out how much fuel you were going to need for the trip and the food for the time that you're away. Make sure we had a HV radio to call Chambers Towers to, you know, log in where we were each day while we were crossing over the desert. That was like 3 days sleeping out under the stars. So, get at Parks Pass. So, drive up through here, up the Unidad, a track till you get to Dalhousie, camp there overnight, then drive out through Purney Boar and across the Simpson. Of course, when we got there, the track was closed because it had been raining, and we met people that had tried three or four times to cross the Simpson and each time being knocked back because the track was closed due to water. But we were quite lucky. They opened the track the day after we got there, so all these guys in their four-wheel drive scampered out of the track and onto the track, and it was like Rundle Mall and sometimes, but cross over to Big Red and back into Birdsville. So that can be a really magnificent experience, certainly sharing it with a lot of other caches. So.
That's quite amazing, all for one cache.
Yeah, all for one cache. Well, we're lucky. There was a cache at Dalhousie where we started off. There's one at Purney Boar. There's one called Under the Shade of the Coolabah Tree, and then Big Red, and then you get into Birdsville, and there's a couple around Birdsville. So a big track for a few. Oh, and I forgot the most important one that was up there that really had me going was that Pluto was up there because Astro has done his solar system cache here in South Australia where he's put out, you know, a model of the solar system, and there are planets at different locations. And it all starts from our parade ground in the city. So that's the sun. And then from there you've got Mount Lofty, you've got Neptune up there, and at 2Ls you've got Mars, and they're all progressively going out across the state until you get Neptune, which I just did last. There was a big drive for one case. I drove to the Western Australian border specifically to get Neptune because I've only got one left to do, which is in Arkaroola, which is Uranus. So, and during the Simpson trip, I picked up Pluto because that's where that one was at, Dalhousie Springs. So I've certainly got a fetish about running after series caches, seriously big one. So I'm still trying to plan my Arkaroola trip so that I can go get the last one of the solar system.
You'd obviously be going through a few litres of petrol to chase after these caches.
You do. And even like, I mean, I suppose we're all the same when we went down to Mount Gambier because we've just come down from the event and that was like three full tanks, or a tank to get down to Mount Gambier, a tank to run around there and a tank to get back.
And not the best time to, not with fuel prices the way they are, not the best time to do it, is it?
No, well, I try not to because I figure it's what my hobby is, and you know, I know a lot of people who spend a lot of money in their hobby and I just calculate the fuel in as part of the costs of the hobby.
Hmm. Now, I've noticed that you've organised quite a few Christmas events. Tell us about the annual Christmas event you do in Adelaide.
Yeah, it's been good. The last two Christmas events have been magnificent. And everybody has attended. You know, like, it's amazing to actually organise an event because I've had to pay deposits each year. And they're saying, well, if you book the numbers, then you have to pay for the plates. And I'm going, oh, my God, I hope everybody rolls up. And nobody has disappointed me over the last 2 years. You know, everybody who said they were coming has come. And it's all worked out really well. 3 years, is it? Oh, well, and my third one. So, but it's just getting, caching is just kicking off so much now. I mean, you look at the caches and the number of people out there, and it's exponential in each year, isn't it? And I just, like next year, we're going to have to go to a barbecue for a picnic for the Christmas dinner because I don't think we're going to get everybody into a pub, but it's just the numbers are going to grow so much.
Do you see geocaching as a sport or a hobby?
It's hard. On a good day, I like to think it's a sport, but then when I hobble along at my slow pace, I have to take it as a hobby. But I find it hard working out where the line is between the two, because certainly when you go, well, I went down to the River Murray, I put a kayak on my back and I walked 300 metres to the Murray mouth, then I kayaked half a kilometre across the Coorong, and then I did a kilometre walk into a forest, I mean, into the conservation park, and then I reversed all that back to the car. I mean, people do that in triathlons almost, don't they, you know? So it becomes a bit sports orientated when you take it to that level.
And final question, any advice for new geocaches, particularly in Adelaide?
New geocaches. Make sure you get a GPS that you can download to your computer. I'm just amazed at some of the people who buy, you know, ones that can't be plugged into a PC. Look at my U-Unit. What can I do with it? So maybe if they talk to other caches first before they go out and get some advice about what they should be buying before they start is always a good start.
Well, listen, SA Parrothead, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and hopefully coming this Christmas or maybe some other time we'll catch up and have a bit of a chat and maybe go for a long-distance cache.
Yeah, that'd be excellent. Not a problem.
In an upcoming episode, we're going to have a look at some of the hazards and dangers of geocaching in an Australian summer and give you a few tips to make sure that you don't get caught out. But I thought we just might revisit an apart from episode 3 of GeoTalk, when I caught up with Steve Kozlowski, who's a zookeeper at Taronga Park Zoo, and we chatted about snakes and what to do if you encounter them and if you're unfortunate enough to be bitten. And I started by asking Steve how many snakes there are in Australia.
Well, in Australia, pretty much all areas have snakes. We have 172 different species of snakes all throughout this country. To get a bit more specific, anywhere where there is good untouched bush, you will find many, many different species of snakes. Many species of snakes in Australia are water lovers. You're walking on the sides of creeks, riverbanks, things like that. And also many snakes are arboreal here in this country as well. So you've also just got to not watch out on the ground, but also watch out high up in trees as well where these species might be found.
What are the chances that if you're walking around, say, in a park or in a national park, that you're likely to encounter a snake?
The chances of encountering a snake are pretty slim. The chances of actually even getting bitten by a snake are even slimmer. The things you have to remember are, as long as you leave these animals alone, more times out of not, they're going to leave you alone. The majority of people that do get bitten by snakes in Australia are people that are trying to catch or kill a snake.
So if you're going out for a bushwalk, what are the precautions that you should take before you actually get out of the car and go walking?
The best precaution is to actually wear long pants and a good pair of boots. Majority of our Australian snakes have very, very small fangs. You have a good pair of trousers on, thick socks, a good pair of hiking boots, which you probably would have. You've already given yourself a 99% protection against those snakes.
Okay, now let's say we're walking along a trail and a snake is lying in front of the trail. What should we do?
The best thing to do is to stay completely still. Snakes have terrible eyesight. Their best sense is their sense of taste or smell with their tongue. If you remain completely still, to a snake, you're an inanimate object. You're a tree or a log or a rock. If you start jumping up and down or moving aggressively towards a snake or even actually just stepping over him, he sees that as a threat. You're an animal that's trying to hurt him, and he's going to react in the only way that snakes do, and that is to either flee or to protect themselves by biting.
Okay, so now let's say we've gotten into the unfortunate circumstance where we have been bitten by a snake or one of our friends have. What's the best thing to do?
Okay, the first thing you have to do is remain calm. Stay very, very calm. If you are the victim, just sit down, stay nice and calm, control your breathing, try not to elevate your heart rate, and then you have to use a compression bandage. The best first aid for any snake bite in Australia is a compression bandage, where you will wrap with a bandage. If you don't have a bandage, you can use a torn up piece of clothing or car upholstery, any type of material that you have available. Wrap from all the way at the bottom of the limb. The majority of bites happen on the legs when you're bushwalking, so you would wrap from the toes all the way up, as far up the limb as possible. Keep that limb very, very still and try and keep it below your heart. Don't elevate the limb, keep it below your heart. The reason for this is that Australian snake venom travels through the lymphatic system, which is just underneath the skin. So by compressing the skin, we're slowing that movement of venom down. You don't have to stop the blood from circulating. You don't want to put the bandage on so tight that you get pins and needles, but as tight as you would for a sprained ankle or a sprained wrist is fine. And then once you are all bandaged up and nice and calm, get a friend to try and get you to help.
Now, sometimes some people go bushwalking by themselves. I mean, what should you do if you are in the situation where you've been bitten, you've applied the bandage? Can you actually walk?
You can walk. The main thing is to try and stay calm. So if you do have to walk, if it's, you know, the best case scenario is that you'd have someone there with you. If you don't, then just try and stay nice and calm and walk as slowly and as calmly as you can. Just keep your heart rate nice and low, and that's the best thing that you can do.
Do you know on average how many people get bitten by snakes in Australia?
Yeah, we have around 2,500 people bitten every single year, and on average we lose 2 to 2.5 people each year from those bites.
And then what's the most, I suppose, common bite that, or most common species that bites?
The most common species is the eastern brown snake. That is a snake which is very prolific throughout the entire eastern half of this entire country. So if you are going to come across a snake, there is a good chance it would be that species, the common brown snake.
Well, now it's time to have a look at a couple of events that are occurring around Australia, and it's 2008 and already they're rolling. On the 1st of January down in Mount Gambier is the Sex for Breakfast, and that's SECS. I think that's Southeast Caching Society. I'm not too sure. They're having their event on the 1st of January. On the 3rd of January down in Hobart is a Tasteful Gathering being hosted by Snoover, and later on that weekend over nearby Richmond in Tasmania is Dippity Dips and Dippers Do. So you can check that one out. And finally, on the 14th of January is the Pub Lunch number 12, back where it started, hosted by the Barramundis over in Adelaide. So it looks like the South Australians and the Tasmanians are just bursting with events. Looks like some of us other states better catch up. Anyway, you can check those out on the links on the show notes. Time to have a look now at the GeoTalk mailbag. And the first email comes from Meredith, also known as Socks, from here in Sydney. She wants to say, first of all, that she enjoys the show and finds the content really interesting and wishes they were all longer. But look, thanks very much for that feedback. We try to keep them fairly succinct and try to get them as regular as possible. So we'll see how we go in 2008. One thing she'd like to see is also a series on paperless geocaching and how you can simply and cheaply achieve it. Like, for example, can you do it with an iPod? And how to use GSAC, Geocaching Swiss Army Knife, for those who don't have as much time to read through forums and so forth. So I'm going to put the call out to all the listeners, because you are all the experts. If you've got any tips on paperless geocaching, how about recording some audio on your computer and emailing it in to geotalk@mac.com, or calling up on the GeoTalk hotline on 800 50 436, and we'll play it on future episodes. So thanks very much for that, Meredith. Got another email here from Colin Chick, also known as SG3, down in Tasmania. Found out about the podcast through the Geocaching 101 event in Hobart. They were giving out CDs of the podcast and really enjoys the show. Admits that they're getting the old caching bug quite badly, and that it's a great thing, and they're wishing everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thanks very much for that, SG3. And finally, another email from NCC1701Z, also known as Dwight. I'm not too sure where Dwight's from. I think from the US, just judging by the fact that they said that they've travelled about 90,000 miles and they've been using a Garmin 60 CSX, which seems to be quite popular amongst the Garmin users, and says thanks very much for the podcast and thanks for your note. And thanks to everyone who sent in an email to the GeoTalk mailbag. Remember, it's geotalk@mac.com. Well, that just about brings us to the end of another episode and brings us to the end of 2007. As I said, hopefully you've had a good year and looking forward to another year of geocaching. I'm looking forward to 2008. Those who don't know, I have a little geo baby appearing sometime in the early years. So I'm going to be living my geocaching life vicariously through a lot of you over the next couple of months, as I spend most of my weekends at home helping to bring up the next generation of geocachers. Before I leave you, the answer to the GeoTalk trivia question, who is the most obsessed geocacher in the country? Now, currently that tag belongs to, and pardon the pun, Red Tag down in Tasmania, who has geocached on 73% of the days that they have been caching. Now, just to clarify what that means, they've been caching 115 days out of the 158 days since they first found a geocache. Now, the next one is Kiwi Explorer on the South Island. They've only been geocaching for 2 months, for 62 days, but they've been spent 41 of those days geocaching. Then you go to Feathertop from Victoria with a factor of 57%, which is 347 out of 604 days, and Winglin from the ACT with 190 days out of 332. I have to give a mention to If over in Queensland, who's been geocaching now for almost 3 years and has been caching for 581 of those days, and to also two of my friends, Ruffer's Guts here in Sydney. He's been caching for just over half of the days that he's been caching. He's to about a clock a year. And finally, also to Dax Emu Mob down in Melbourne, who's been caching for 799 days out of 1,549. So there's a few obsessed people up there. I'm only doing it one out of every 5 days, which seems to be what most of you are doing. But if you're enjoying geocaching that much that you've got to get out there and do it, good luck to you. Well, that's all for this episode of Geo Talk. Hopefully in the next episode, we'll get some audio from the Bathurst 24-hour event. And in upcoming episodes, as promised, we'll take a look at some of the hazards and dangers of caching in an Australian summer. Until next time, safe geocaching.